the other day a baby arrived in our living room. It's not what you're thinking. We're not adopting. It was actually our neighbors. They've been having one of those days where everything had been falling through, and I mean everything. So we got a text that said, hey, can you watch this baby for an hour? And of course we said, yeah, why not? And 1 hour turned into two, and two turned into three, and three turned into five, and five turned into six. And 6 hours went by, and they picked up this precious 8-day-old baby. I had never held a baby that young before. I mean, usually you don't get to. I mean, if it's not yours or someone really close to you, to get to hold or care for it, I mean, we just cuddled. She slept. I spent the entire time terrified that her tiny lungs had stopped breathing because I couldn't really see the movement of her chest up and down. It was precious. We moved into our neighborhood about 2 years ago. We met our neighbors on either side. You know, we got to know each other. We worked on constructing fences together, understanding how the community was playing out because it's a new one. But these neighbors, the ones who dropped off the baby, actually live, you know, about 10 houses down. And we kind of noticed them first because they were another gay couple, and there's not a lot of those. And so every time we passed each other, we did that secret queer to queer acknowledgement. I'm not allowed to tell you what it looks like, but it's real. But it took a long time, maybe like 6 months, to go from just that secret acknowledgement to, you know, actually talking. And those few times talking led to numbers being exchanged and then arranging to hang out on porches to really get to know each other. And that's when we learned that they were in the process, like us, of becoming foster parents. We had someone close by that we could, you know, vent to when the process was being particularly stubborn, or just understand the small wins that you have in foster parenting that most people might not exactly understand. But it took 6 months to move from those initial moments to actually kindling a friendship. Small incremental steps that allowed that movement to take place. 2 years after our meeting led to that baby arriving at our doorstep, to that text, hey, I need some help. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, we had each offered to help each other all the time, but none of us had actually really taken the other up on it, which is, I think, a pretty common thing, right? We offer to help, but that doesn't mean that we actually ask for it. Which is why I don't want you to think that I am the good person in this story, because I'm not. Because in our society, it takes so much more courage to be the person asking for help. I mean, the vast majority of us are willing to pitch in once we're asked. But ask for it? Like, to truly stop and say, hey, I need some help. I mean, what if no one says yes? What if they do say yes? They realize how much of a mess your life is in, and they ghost you. They fade away. They never say yes again, or they stop being your friend. I mean, I've never thought that before. What if when we ask for help, we realize how much help we actually need? And so even the thought of asking for help pulls us too close to the edge. So I was watching a video on the design of early Soviet buildings in the USSR. I mean, obviously. And it was actually really interesting because they said that when they were designing apartment buildings, they intentionally made the living quarters small so that it would force people to come into the common areas. So each family space was small, but the common living areas, the community centers that they would situate around the residential buildings, those would be bigger and allow for, I mean, that kind of communist ideal of that collective. I mean, look around many neighborhoods in Fort Collins, and you realize that in North America, we've designed a very different way of being. A way of being that says, I should have everything I need. Even the windows that we put in are designed to let light in, but not really let prying eyes or our neighbors see into our lives. I mean, good fences make good neighbors, right? We're designed to be autonomous. Professor Eva Kittery says that the independent individual is always a fictitious myth of those who have sufficient privilege to shift the concern of dependence onto others. I'm going to say that again. The independent individual is always a fictitious myth of those who have sufficient privilege to shift the concern of dependence onto others. I mean, think about that. Said another way, privilege breeds an illusion of independence. For those of us with privilege, like me, we can sometimes buy or maneuver our way out of experiencing the world as a mass of interdependent relationships, or of a sets of cause and effect that impact us in ways that we don't have control. Privilege gives us both access to choices that other people don't have, but the illusion, because we can distance ourselves from the impact of our choices. We don't experience the world as a mass of interdependent relationships to which we are dependent upon and with. Instead, a set of options and choices whose consequences can be mitigated with regard to the implications of any of the choices we make. People who don't have that privilege never live with the illusion that they are independent. In fact, their whole lives are filled with all of the reasons that tell them that they are dependent and interdependent. The forces of racism, of classism, the ways that capitalism plays out, all of it reminds them over and over again that they are at the mercy of someone else, that their choices are bound, that they are dependent. That independent myth is insidious because it corrupts us. Firstly, it breaks our ability to connect with each other so that we don't form the relationships that we need to survive, but it also has the consequence of deeply harming other people. Because when we don't see the consequences of our actions, of the way we live our lives, we're more prone to make choices that negatively impact others. We're not independent. We need each other. We need each other when babies need caring for, when we need someone to vent to, for when meals need to be delivered, when laughter needs to be shared. We need the collective to resolve issues that we cannot face alone, like issues of racism and colonization and misogyny. All of these things that we need to tackle together. And in our bones, we know this. In our bones, we know we need community, that we are actually dependent. I mean, coronavirus has taught many of us that the illusion of control is just that, an illusion, that we are dependent on so many things. And yet, we like to delude ourselves to think that we're not dependent, that we can do it ourselves. But in our bones, we feel the calling of community that we can rest in, that deepest sense of belonging, but our heads and our society and even our communities don't make that easy. We get busy trying to get everything done. We don't have the time to invest in relationships that over the long haul would blossom and grow to be the ones we need them to be in 2 years, but we don't plant those seeds. Kids are great at this. Kids that are watching this right now, you need to teach us how to do this better. Seriously. You know how to make friends. I've watched it over and over again. Kids taking risks of building connections. Kids know their neighbors way better than adults. This series is all about loving where you live. Before we can love where we live, we actually have to, you know it. Because love isn't generic. Love is specific. Love is particular. Love says that, of course, I don't know you completely. It's never possible. But I do know the contours of your life. I do know about you. And I care about that. Before we can love, we have to know. Before we know, we have to notice. This is the most basic principle, right? I mean, I say it and it's like not profound, and yet it sort of is. However, how often do we forget to notice? How often would you go past the same things over and over again and not notice something that was right in front of us? I've been trying to do this in my neighborhood, trying to notice things that I didn't notice before. Like the red-winged blackbirds that live in the kind of marshy flood mitigation ditch. Or the Black Lives Matter signs that are appearing in windows. I notice that more people are walking around and are smiling during COVID than they ever have before. You know, especially in moments like this when so many of us are charged to change the world, we need to not just charge ahead. We need to take time to survey the world and listen, especially those of us who are white, like me. We need to listen to people of color and their experiences, not discount them or think that we have the solutions. We need to truly listen.
There's a principle in permaculture that says you should spend a year getting to know all of the seasons of a piece of land before you make any major changes. Witnessing how the seasons dance, where the streams of water appear in the spring, the flowers that bloom, the insects that pollinate, the way beings move in the space, the way life knits itself together. There's a lot of wisdom in that practice. It reminds us that each part depends on the whole. We are not the masters, but partners in tending to a whole that requires us all to play our parts. Now, our mission as a church is to unleash courageous love in Northern Colorado and beyond, a love that is found when our stories, the stories of our neighbors, I mean our real neighbors, for one of our sources said, we are called to love our neighbors as ourselves. That these stories are combined and conspire to risk the highest good. For us to be truly inviting courageous love, we have to start to know each other. And to know each other, we have to start to notice one another. At a time when addiction rates are rising, where loneliness is higher than it ever has been, where families are struggling, I mean, PSD is saying that the best case scenario this fall is having kids in classrooms 2 days a week. As white people are struggling to understand and people of color are exhausted from the grief of daily violence, we have to get proximate. We need to invest now in relationships that in 6 months, 2 years down the line, will have the stamina to hold our vulnerability, our pain, and our community's transformation. To love, we have to know. To know, we have to notice. So our challenge for you is to begin to notice. Most people don't know the names of more than two of their neighbors. This has to change. Most people can't name more than five species around their house. That has to change. We have to get proximate. So take the pledge. Learn the names of your neighbors this week. Learn something more than their name. Light in the awkwardness of tending to the seeds that will blossom in 2 or 6 months, transforming this old world into a garden for all.
If we love our neighbors truly, we must meet them face to face.